Well, today we plan to start Daniel chapter 6, which is the famous, well-known chapter of Daniel in the Lion's Den. And I ended last week's lesson saying that I think this is the most well-known, widespread chapter and account of Daniel. And it's the more widespread known, widely spread known accounts in all of the Bible, for sure among the children. And Daniel in the Lion's Den is one of their most famous and popular accounts that every child likes to hear about. And then the song, "I Want to Be Like Daniel," they love that song. And so Daniel is in the children's and the population's mind, most notably because of this chapter and what happens here, where this is very similar and just about parallels Daniel chapter 3 with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego being thrown into the fiery furnace because of this, well, what Kaufman calls a wicked decree, an ungodly decree, that if you don't worship, in that case, an idol, and in this case, if you pray or serve some other god other than the king, then you get the death penalty. So these are wicked laws. But anyway, this for some reason, this stuck in the children's mind and got more widespread circulation than even Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and which I still feel, as far as maybe importance, because of the uniqueness, Daniel chapter 2, as far as should be much more widely known, because God gave through Daniel the time frame that he would make his kingdom to come upon the earth, and what time frame it would be, which would we know now. It was whatever, well, it was named then whatever kingdom came after the Greek Empire, and we know now that that was the Roman Empire, and that was the day that God established his kingdom. That was the time frame. But it's this Daniel chapter 6 with Daniel in the lion's den that the children for sure are interested in. And I'll go back to where we started in Daniel chapter 1, except here we are in Daniel chapter 1. Daniel and his three friends were adolescents in their young age, and we said and went over some scriptures that I'm going to go back over this again, plus add another one due to Daniel's age at this point. But here they had second to none teaching and raising from their parents. All four of these children and adolescents at the time, and all they had was 14 or 15 years or whatever it was with their parents, but they taught them so well and were so grounded that in their that they were not only able to at that time fight against unrighteousness and refuse to do anything that was unrighteous and against God, and they held on to this into their older age with the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And now Daniel, here with Daniel chapter 6, this is under the kingdom of the Medo-Persians now, at the end of the Babylonian Empire. And they think that he's in his 80s here, maybe mid-80s. So he's somewhere 83, 85 or something, they think. And so here he is toward the end of his life, and he is still just as strong as he was years before. But this is so impressive at what these four men, young men, boys at the beginning, did. Here they were taken away from their parents, and we don't even know who their parents are. They're not ever named, but they are the backbones behind these four men, and that instilled in them the teaching to observe God's word and never depart from it. And so I want to go back over Deuteronomy chapter 6, and we covered this when we were in Daniel chapter 1. But I want to, this is just a good time to, another reminder, and go over it again. Deuteronomy chapter 6, it'll be 5 through 9. But Deuteronomy 6, 5, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength." And now Jesus repopularized this passage and in Matthew. But this is a command here that God is giving to the Israelites. In verse 6, "And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart." And then, here we go. This is the teaching that obviously these four sets of parents instilled in Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Verse 7, "You shall teach them diligently these commandments to your children, and shall talk to them," how often? "When you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up." Years ago at Porter Hill, Paul was teaching this to in a class, and one of the elders was there. And whenever Paul was reading this, and the elder said, "Well, there's nothing left out. That means we're to teach our children all the time." And Paul said, "Well, that's the point. You're teaching your children all the time. That's what God said. It's all a continual teaching of the children." And obviously, for whatever many years, 13, 14, 15, 16 years, that's what these four young men got from their parents before they were separated and taken into captivity. Verse 8, "You shall bind them as a sign on your hand. They shall be as frontlets between your eyes." So this is, they were being bombarded with these commandments, and they were being drilled into these children. And now, not all, we can know and infer that not all of these Israelites taught their children this way, because there were other Israelites that were put in Daniel chapter 1, put in this training program, and they went ahead, obviously, and ate the meat and drank the alcohol, the unclean meat. I mean, the meat that was unclean meat and meat sacrificed to idols, both. And because it was only these four Hebrews, all of the other Hebrew boys that were in this program, they just went ahead and they did as they were instructed and did not heed this. So obviously their parents did not drill into them like these four. So these four sets of parents are definitely set apart, even though they're nameless. Nothing got recorded about them, but they are honored forever through their children. And then verse 9, "You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates." This is just another good reminder, and we have evidence that there were parents that did this, and we see the other side of the results of this great training and upbringing that God outlined for them and commanded them and assigned for them to do and to abide by. And now I want to go through a different verse, one more verse, Proverbs 22:6. Proverbs 22:6. And this is the reason covering this is because now Daniel's in his old age. Here he is, not far from death, and he is still serving God, even though the punishment for serving God is going to be the death penalty. And Proverbs 22:6, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. So this Daniel is the living proof and example that this is a true statement and a truism, and he is the fulfillment of this passage, or one of the fulfillments. But he was trained up well, and when he is old, he did not forget it, even though it was the death penalty. So all four of these men were given the death penalty for serving God. And they all had the choice not to serve God, and they wouldn't have gotten the death penalty. But even though Daniel does not make this statement, he's making it this same statement silently that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego verbalized, where they said, regardless of what happens to our body, we are going to serve God. Even if you put us to death, that is going to be what we're going to do. And they were not concerned. What Jesus would say some nearly 600 years into the future of when these men lived, Jesus said, don't be concerned about the ones who can harm your body. Be concerned about the one that will harm your soul, that can destroy your soul. So don't worry about the one that can destroy your body, only the one that can destroy your soul. And these four, they were not concerned about the different humans, even though they'd go through a horrific death. A burning to death has been categorized as, I've heard, Dad always said, and he'd heard this, and I never did ask him where, he never did say, that he'd always heard that is the most painful death, is being burned alive. And that's what the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were up against, which God saved them. But being torn apart and eaten alive by lions, that's a horrendous death and a painful death. Here, the lions pulling on you as you're still alive, pulling maybe your arms apart and stripping your flesh, and that's a gruesome way to die also, which God saves him in that event also. Any questions or comments on this about anything up to this point? Okay. You know what? I'm not sure. Now, a lot of the things that they do in the present age, it is nothing biblical, but in their day, the scribes and Pharisees, but then elders and others, due to traditions, and this was an issue and a problem even in the first century with Jesus, under Jesus' day. And Jesus would tell them, here you are holding the commandments of men, or the laws of men above the commandments of God. You want to follow these man's laws, and you're ignoring God's commandments. So I'm not sure, but there's many things that they brought in tradition, and what Jesus would say, they had instituted this washing of hands that was nothing more than a ritual thing before, and they were condemning Jesus' apostles for not washing their hand in this ritualistic manner before they ate. And Anyway, Jesus chastised these scribes and Pharisees over that false condemnation. But anyway, I'm kind of thinking of a lot of the things that they wear and stuff was not biblical, but it's been traditional in their laws that they put on the people. Yeah, and I'm not sure. We'd have to kind of look that up and see.
But it says they put it on the doorpost. I've seen them pack the doorpost before they enter a house. And I was wondering if that was part of it.
Okay, to where they might have these commandments that they're trying to memorize. Maybe I'm not sure what that is. Now, what I have seen publicly is like at the Wailing Wall. Now, they all are holding a Bible, you know, a book, and they're rocking back and forth and reading this out loud. And so that, you know, they do that, but I'm not sure what that box thing's about. Right, right. Yeah, and I've wondered why they're rocking back and forth, but they're all doing it. I don't know. I think it'd make me dizzy. Yeah, yeah. And it may be that they're not necessarily reading it. Maybe it is for show. Because it would get me dizzy to keep my eyes on those words. I get... Right, yeah. I get car sickness. Do what? Yeah, I know. Yeah, I don't want to... So anyway. Well, we'll start with Daniel 6, verse 1. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be over the whole kingdom. And over these, three governors of whom Daniel was one, and the satraps might give account to them so that the king would suffer no loss. So, Daniel is already put, you have the king, and then you have three governors, or Kaufman and other commentators called them presidents, set up underneath the king. So here he is already at the top of this government of the Medo-Persians. And Kaufman felt like that this was due in large part because of what happened in this previous chapter when Belshazzar made Daniel the number the third person in authority in the kingdom, and that this bled over into this. And now, he didn't explain how he came to that, but he thought that that had something to do with it that way. Which, now, very likely, the event that happened the night the Medo-Persians came in and destroyed the city of Babylon and took them over, with this handwriting on the wall that God did, very likely that got spread to these Medo-Persians. And then we know that Darius has a high regard for Daniel. We're about to find this out here in the third verse. He rises himself up head and shoulders above even these other two governors. But anyway, he gets a high regard later over this, but probably he came in with a high regard because this, with this hand of God writing on the wall, got told to these Medo-Persians. And so, but anyway, he's put here already in a high power of authority. And then these three governors are then going to give an account. Each had 40 of these satraps underneath them, so that's another bureaucratic division. So I guess the people will give complaints or whatever, petitions to these 40 satraps, and then those 40 will report to these governors. And And then these governors would take things to the King Darius. And with this statement at the end of verse 2, so that the king would suffer no loss, none of the commentators explained or even commented on this. I'm assuming that this is so he's not having to go and find out directly from the people whatever they're wanting. And this is just a good level of division that is set up in our government and even set up in corporations and businesses, where you have different levels and supervisors that report, and you report just to the one above. And so that way, like in a company, the CEO can't take all these complaints or petitions from every employee in the company, so you have to report to your direct supervisor, and then if it is needed, it'll work its way up the chain. So I'm assuming that that's what this is talking about, so that the king would suffer no loss, make his time much more efficient. Verse 3, then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps because an excellent spirit was in him. And the king gave thought to setting them over the whole realm. So the governors and the satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find no charge or fault because he was faithful, nor was there any error or fault found in him. So immediately there's a jealousy that comes forth because Daniel distinguished himself above all of these other government officials, and God's excellent spirit was in him, which we can assume what these others were. They were, well, very similar, essentially the same as what our current day politicians are. They will lie, cheat, and steal at a drop of a hat, and that's their common practice. They don't know anything else other than to do that. Whereas Daniel was completely opposite of that. He was upstanding. He told the truth. He only did things that were right. He wouldn't do any shady deal over here to the side. He wouldn't take money under the table for a favor. So there's a jealousy then, because the king noticed this. And This phrase in verse 3, the king thought to set him over the whole realm. Well, what we would call this today is the king was strongly considering making him the prime minister over Babylon, where he would be the number two man just underneath him, and it would knock out these other two governors or presidents that were alongside with him. And if that had been, that was the same thing that happened with Joseph years before in Egypt, to where he was the number two man. He was like the prime minister over Egypt. And now, this jealousy and hatred is going to come into play here. So they're trying to find a charge against him, but Daniel was a truthful and upright and upstanding man, and there was no fault or error to be found in him. Then these men said, "We shall not find any charge against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the laws, the law of God." So now they're going to conspire among themselves to get King Darius to sign a law that says you cannot serve any other god without serving the king. And foolishly, King Darius will sign this decree, this law, and it's an irrevocable law. And he gets hoodwinked in this, is what he does. But he was foolish to do it initially and then regardless of signing this irrevocable law, he should have revoked it anyway. And Kaufman comes up with this on an outline and a paragraph that he talks about that he should have broken this anyway. This is all King Darius's fault from beginning to end, ultimately, because you're always going to have people to attack the righteous. So we will pause here with verse 5. Are there any questions or comments on any of this?